Hello, and welcome to Anime Stirring to the West. I'm the spectacular Coley Boyd, and here are my amazing friends.
Hi, I'm Zeb Berryman, and also one of Spider-Man's friends, apparently.
Not Spider-Man, the spectacular Coley Boyd.
Okay, yeah, I'm Zeb. My pronouns are he, him.
I'm Lydia Lewis. My pronouns are she, her, and if we're going to be superheroes now, then I would like to be Mystique.
Yeah, shapeshifting that checks out.
For the win.
You took the good one.
Well, no, you could still be like Kitty Pryde or Domino or...
See, probably the Fire Stars. That was probably the Iceman.
Hell yeah. Well, it doesn't live well.
Lydia, you're Miss Lion.
I don't know who that is.
Aunt May's dog from Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
I'm Elizabeth Ledwell. My pronouns are she, her. By day, I'm a bodacious barista. By night, I am the one, the only Domino.
Hell yeah.
Okay, leaving aside, whatever that was, I'm going to get into the episode.
I like how these are getting less structured as we go along.
Yeah. Romeo x Juliet, episode 11. The Vows. The Blessing of the Morning Sun. We open on a really pretty shot of Neo Verona and Romeo and Juliet flying above while soft music plays. Romeo asks if she's cold, and she says that she's fine. He asks where they should go. She tells him, a place we've never been before, where no one knows our names, where Montague and Capulet are unknown. Somewhere so, like that.
So basically she wants to go to the opposite of Cheers.
Yeah.
Where nobody knows your name. Da, na, na, na.
Coley. I think that's as far as you could go without violating copyright laws.
They will come down harder on you than Boston does to the Yankees fans. Like, they will come down hard.
He agrees, and they fly off into the distance. The two of them fly past the house on the lake. Juliet reflects on how much has happened since they were there. And Cielo dives down and traces his foot through the water, splashing them. Romeo says he's never been beyond the mountains. She says they should go see what's there then. He asks if she's scared, and she says not when she's with him. They both blush, but they blush a lot of this episode, so if I don't say it, just assume they do.
This whole episode is just blushing and awkwardness.
Yeah, they fly over the mountains and snuggle up to one another while blushing. They arrive in a lovely forest. Romeo says that he remembers a story about a forest past the lake where Cielo's kindred dwell. Juliet is impressed, but Romeo is like, it's just a bunch of trees. She teases him about missing the forest by only seeing the trees. She picks up some wild berries. And he takes out the handkerchief to carry them. She's overjoyed. He still has it. And determinedly says she'll make him that shirt next. He clearly knows that this is an absolute disaster waiting to happen, but says he'll anticipate her efforts.
That's because Romeo's a good boyfriend.
Romeo's supportive of his girlfriend's hobbies and interests.
Yeah.
Romeo's better than most guys I've known.
Yeah.
Hashtag Romeo is what people mean when they say not all men.
Hashtag Romeo is relationship goals.
The two of them sit on a big-ass tree branch and eat berries. Romeo is hurt by it. She teases him about having never eaten anything wild before. She reflects on how she and Cordelia used to gather wild berries to make jam. When asked about Cordelia, she talks about how Cordelia was like an older sister to her and a pillar of strength and kindness. She even used to brush my hair for me every single day since I was a child. Even when I was sick in bed, she gently brushed my hair. Back then, I had to pretend to be a boy and hid my hair without knowing why. But every day, Cordelia always told me, such beautiful hair. Juliet, I just love seeing your hair. Cordelia tells Juliet that she loves her hair because it's a secret between them. Juliet says, she's the reason that I never let anyone cut my hair short. Wind starts blowing and Romeo follows the scent of flowers. They find this beautiful field of flowers and the two of them lie down in the field giggling. Later, as they go through the woods, they note Cielo is in a good mood. Romeo reflects that Cielo has been better than a brother to him. He was a gift from his mother the day after she left the family to be a tree nun. You can't replace a mother with a dragon steed, are some wise words from Romeo. I have missed her dearly over the years, but at least with Cielo, I've never felt truly alone. As Cielo grew into his wings and learned to fly, my world expanded greatly, and I was able to visit my mother as well. Juliet says that Portia is a very kind soul and that she truly cares about him and his well-being. She reflects that they still left her without saying a word, and he pulls her into an embrace and tells her not to worry, and his mother will be fine. Suddenly, Cielo makes a noise, and we see another dragon seed that's injured. She looks scared, but Juliet soothes her. Steed and Cielo nuzzle each other, but then a group of ruffians come out of the woods.
Yeah, these are generic Fire Emblem bandit-looking motherfuckers.
I know we just joked about this last episode of characters looking like minor Fire Emblem characters, but these are just clearly the bandits that you fight for the first few missions before moving on to bigger missions.
I'm going to say something controversial, yet brave. Romeo x Juliet is basically the Crom and Sully romance from Fire Emblem Awakening. Change my mind, you cannot. I swear to God, we need to research if anybody that worked on this worked on Fire Emblem. Because it really does look like a fucking Fire Emblem. It's driving me crazy, like... Is this like a spin-off of Fire Emblem? Was this originally supposed to be a weird spin-off of Fire Emblem that things changed midway through and they had to tweak a few things?
I think it's just an influential art style.
Yeah, but yeah, these guys have fucking jobber written all over them. They're like, hello, we're the generic bad guys to provide an action scene to show that our heroes are pretty fucking badass. We're never going to appear again. In fact, we may as well no longer exist after this.
Yeah, the ruffians say that the mares are theirs by right of saw her first, and they decide to steal Cielo too, backing up what Coley just said. So
that's the right of saw it first is my favorite right, and I will claim a lot of things. If yeah, that were a law, I would walk onto construction sites and just sit there.
So anyway, the bandits almost immediately get owned.
One Romeo of them gets hit by Cielo, and I'm not sure how he lived.
Yeah, horse kicks are like real rough.
Oh, they're not just real rough. They can be easily lethal.
They can kill you.
Yeah.
I'm going to posit that Cielo probably has weaker legs and smaller and hollow bones in order to fly.
But he needs the strength in order to hold up a person. Because
he does.
Like, even then, like, that wouldn't decrease the how bad the kick is that much. Like, that guy probably at least has a fucking broken rib.
Yeah, it's the hoof that makes the horses so dangerous in a lot of ways. Anyways,
yeah.
Romeo tells them to scram and the ruffians run off. Romeo says, that was nearly interesting, which is probably the harshest burn that Romeo has ever done in this entire series.
His entire life.
It's also a very Romeo burn.
Yeah. And then promises to protect Juliet like Cielo protected the bear.
I want to point out that he promises to protect Juliet, but in that fight, Juliet took one of those guys down as well. By just kicking, like, she, like, ducks under a sword and kicks him in the back of the head.
She uses her cape like Batman from the Arkham City game. Swish.
Yeah.
Swish, I'm not there anymore. Da-da-da.
Yeah, so he frees Cielo and tells him, go with her, my old friend, and make your own life. From now on, you must protect the one you love. You can live in freedom here, unconstrained by anything. Together, with her, let us both live our days with the ones we cherish. I'll miss you. Romeo and Juliet leave.
And Romeo's... I have one thing to say.
Yeah.
Romeo is kind of a dick with the Cielo. He just met this mare like a fucking minute ago, and now you're like going, all right, it's obvious you're in love. Here, you know, you could be free. What do you mean, Cielo, that you've been a domesticated your entire life and you don't know how to survive in the wild? You'll be okay. You have love.
I mean,
I have another thought on that one. Like, they're basically fleeing the city, and Romeo knows that his dad is probably gonna send people after him.
I mean, we're gonna... I'd put a pin on that thought for a little bit later in this episode.
Right. We'll come back to that.
My thing is, though, like, thematically, I like it. It does know, you know, he's saying, Cielo, I have people in my life now. You know, we are both free. We are no longer prisoners of my father. Like, the father, like, his Papa Montague even tried to kill Cielo at one point.
Yeah. So
you're no longer something that can be used to hold me back. I love you. Goodbye. You go find someone, be happy with someone, because I did it. Like, I think it's great thematically, but a dumb part of me is like, I want it to be Juliet's horse, though.
Yeah.
I think I'll say with the whole he just met the horse thing, though, is that animal attraction doesn't really work like that. Animals mate pretty quickly.
Fair enough.
Anyways.
Leave a Cielo out in the wilderness, you know, after being domesticated his entire life.
Romeo doesn't understand that, and we're giving him a pass.
Yeah, also, the mayor can teach him how to, like, hunt food or whatever. He's a horse. He'll be fine.
He's a horse. He's a dragon steed. I'm sure he's got a little, you know, a little kick. Does he eat more, like, a plant-based diet or more of a meat-based diet? Because I always assumed dragons needed meat.
I mean, he's a horse, so probably plant-based.
I find it funny if he eats meat, so I'm going with if he eats meat.
What about the boar?
Here's a question. Would Cielo eat a porg? I would posit yes. Because I think anyone would eat a porg if given the chance.
I would, too. They do look like... They look like dark meat chicken.
I'm just gonna say something here.
Yes.
I'm a vegetarian and I'd eat a porg.
I'd also eat a porg. You mentioned Cielo hunting.
Yeah.
And I'm just imagining how terrifying that would be.
Clearly Cielo knows how to fight. He's been trained for that.
But just imagine you're going about your day. Right, you're going about your day, and you see, like, a deer on the side of the road.
A deer on the side of the road. And you?
Ouch!
Okay, Lydia, what are you trying to say?
And a horse swoops down.
So in that case... How would Cielo eat his prey? Because for some reason, I'm imagining that he dislocates his jaw and just eats them whole.
Oh, fucking... Well, no, I imagine he dislocates his jaw to, like, fucking bite them. Like, I'm just imagining he's just straight up just going... The taste of blood. Oh.
Here's a question. Do dragon seeds hunt humans?
I can see
in the wild, they do.
Later on, Teal's going to come back as an antagonist, being like, Romeo, I've tasted blood, and now I desire yours. This is for leaving me in the wilderness, you dick.
Oh, no. What if they can breathe fire? What if Teal comes back and it's just breathing CGI fire at everybody?
If they could breathe fire, it would make much more sense that they get called dragon seeds, honestly.
And they have the weird dragon tail.
What the fuck led us to this conversation?
Romeo, you did, Coley. You led us to this conversation. Romeo and Juliet leave. Romeo's clearly sad, but he tries to put on a brave face and tells Juliet not to worry. Well, she thinks that she wishes she could bear his pain and sorrow in his stead. They find a town. So, like, pulling a pin out of that, Romeo goes into a bar to get food, and he sells a jewel for food that has his family crest on it like a fucking dumbass.
Also, he's like, Juliet, wait here, I'll go get us some food. I'd be like, no, you don't know how to haggle.
He clearly does not know what money's worth because he could have pawned it for more.
Also, I think he understands economic theory. He probably understands some, like, at the time advanced economic theory for, like, vaguely medieval Elizabethan era time economic theory. He does not know it in practice or at a smaller scale.
Like, that barkeep was just like, oh, yeah, sure, you could have some food for that priceless jewel. So, anyways, the two of them have a picnic by a bridge, and Romeo talks about a boat he saw and that they could use it to travel. We get an absolutely gorgeous shot of them traveling by boat as the sun sets. Juliet has set her head on his chest and is sleeping. Lovely violin music plays while Romeo reflects that if he could keep her from her dreams, he would. And he repeats her thought, thinking, if only I could bear your suffering for you. Juliet wakes up and reflects on a time she saw a bride ride through the city by boat. So we get like an image. We see the bride and the groom going down one of the city's canals as flower petals fall down. Juliet says she had grown used to dressing as a boy and even kind of liked it. But at that moment, I wanted nothing more than to one day wear a dress and veil and be a beautiful bride. She asks Romeo if he has any dreams of youth, and he says he never thought to have a lifelong dream, but a life with her is better than any simple dream, because Romeo is occasionally extremely smooth. So they sleep on the boat under a blanket. I'm just going to say this as somebody who's taken both raft and kayak trips. Don't do this in real life, kids.
You will die.
Yeah, you will die. You will fucking die. Don't sleep in a fucking boat with no one. No. Anyways, they end up walking down a craggy wasteland and are watched by an impossibly cool looking old guy with a smoking pipe. Gandalf only wishes he looked this cool.
Right?
Yeah, they find a field of course, irises, because irises are everywhere. You cannot escape flower symbolism. Flower symbolism will follow you till the day you die.
It's okay, because iris is the good person smell.
Yeah, exactly.
I smell like roses.
Not like wet-ass pussy.
Holy!
I have to bring back the wet-ass irises joke.
The wet-ass irises joke also comes back next episode, don't worry.
It's gonna be a theme for a long time, I feel like.
We will be talking about, I don't know, like, we'll be talking about, like, the X-Men anime, and we'll be making wet-ass Iris jokes.
To the confusion of everybody that just signed on to listen to the X-Men once.
Yeah. They follow the field and find an old ivy church. Juliet rushes inside. We see the two of them enter, Juliet wearing the handkerchief like a veil. We hear Romeo say, "I told you before that I never thought to need a dream. Yet now all I desire is to make your dream come true." The two of them swear to share joy and sorrow for the rest of their life. It's very sweet. The episode preview is, "Wherefore the blissful heart may doubly beat in thought and pattern shared by one nearby. Still may the step of fate come forth to meet us a savage test for new love to try." This was overall, I think, a very sweet episode that is sad because you know it's not gonna last.
Very. I like how also it gives Romeo a little more character. Like, we have, you know, he's a little more than just like, "I just think he's neat."
Yeah.
Now he's no longer Potato Man. He has a personality.
We're going to be talking about potatoes next episode. Don't you worry.
We did get some good characterization of him in the episode prior, too.
I just like we're getting a little more of him because I think we've gotten more of Juliet's backstory and background in depth compared to Romeo. So I'm liking we're getting a little more of him. Also, I like the world building. Like, we're getting, like, there is something outside me of Verona, and it is bland and sad.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Should we head on over to the next episode, aka the halfway point of the series?
Yeah.
Yes, we are officially at the halfway point. So, at some point in the near future, expect the end theme to change, but not the main theme, because they knew that they had a good thing when they got it.
They're like, "Listen, we paid to have the rights of You Lift Me Up in Japanese. Okay, we are not squandering that."
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that must have cost a lot more than the average anime theme song does, right?
Yeah.
I'm imagining whoever owns, like, the, either, I don't know, the musical right or the cop, I don't know how it works in the music industry. I'm sure somebody will write an angry review detailing why I'm wrong, but, like, whoever owns, like, the copyright to it must, like, charge a lot of money. Like, because some music, like, I remember The Office, apparently they blew their music money, like, their music budget for one song all season. They had to use it all season. It was, like, an ABBA song, I think.
Yeah, I mean, ABBA would be very expensive, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm imagining it took, you know, a bit of money. Also, I just want to, like, who sings Lift Me Up? Can we ask whoever sang You Lift Me Up first what they thought? Can we send an email?
I actually searched into that one. The version we're familiar with in the U.S. was done by Josh Groban. But Josh Groban was not the original singer-songwriter. It was a Norwegian-Irish duo called Secret Garden.
Aw, that's lovely.
Composed by someone named Rolf Loveland.
Are they still alive? Can we send them an email? Be like, "Hey, you approved the use of your song in this somewhat obscure anime. Have you watched it? What's your opinion on it?"
Oh, the singer who does the Japanese version, though, is Lena Park. And she sings both the Japanese and English versions, which also, her version has an additional verse in it that isn't in the original song, which is really cool, I think. I like her version the best.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. So,
but I'm pretty certain Loveland is still alive.
Yep. So, for this episode, solace to stay this way. So we see the wedding scene again, and then the two of them come upon an abandoned village. Inside, they find a messed up but solid home. Romeo says that it will protect them, but it leaves something to be desired for their first night of wedded bliss. Juliet says that it's perfect. It's got a kitchen and a bed, but the only thing she really needs is him. She finds a dress and puts it on while Romeo looks away embarrassed. When she's in the dress, Romeo tells her she looks stunning. That night, the two of them clean up, and we see them sitting on the bed together. He tells her that he is no longer the person he was, and he will shield her from every sorrow. And he continues to try to make a speech, but she falls asleep. They wake up and have to look for food and wood. Romeo thinks the farm is barren, but she finds potatoes. He is surprised because he has never seen a potato before. What the fuck?
That is some British royalty ass stuff.
He thought they were rocks. He thought they were big rocks.
He thought they were ugly rocks. Ugly, soft rocks.
Romeo, my dude!
Okay, maybe he is a dumbass.
He is! He absolutely is!
I still posit that Romeo is a himbo.
He's not beefy enough.
He is.
No, no one is beefy enough in this series. Romeo is a himbo.
I'll just say
okay,
something.
No one in this series can be a himbo.
A thing I'll say, real quick. I know that we, as a group, have had daddy discourse before. And when we've had daddy discourse, this will be a very weird thing for people who don't hang out with us to listen to. But yeah, we've had daddy discourse before. And during that bad daddy discourse, we have agreed that even though he doesn't have the right body type, Spike from Cowboy Bebop counts because he just has enough of the attitude. So I would posit that if that can be true of daddies, then this can also be true of Romeo.
I would disagree. Here's why. Daddies show a wide amount of body type. With daddies, a lot of it is the attitude and also how you dress and stuff like that. With a himbo, it is about a himbo's a dumb beefy guy. If you're not the beefy, then you're just a dumb guy.
By the standards of the show, Romeo's kind of beefy. Do you remember shirtless Romeo?
Yeah,
he's pretty beefy. He's pretty beefy by the standards of the show. And yeah, I think he checks enough boxes to count.
I think if this were a different series, he would be very beefy. Like JoJo beefy.
All right. Anyway, I don't agree, but this is a tangent.
Yeah. You guys realize that despite all the political statements that we have made, this is the thing that people who listen to our podcast are going to fight about the most, right?
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say one more thing. Can Romeo be a himbo? The longest thread in the forum, 17,000 pages before eventually being locked. So they walk further to find water. At the river, Juliet thinks she heard someone call her, and eventually finds like this kind of hidden door. They pass through it and see the root of Aeschylus. The old dude shows up and says, "It was a spring, although now not a single drop of water remains. The roots of two trees hold this world together. As you can see, one has already died, and thus as a result, the remaining one won't last much longer either." Juliet's eyes reflect the root, and she collapses and then runs back home. Yep.
Did anyone else get some like weird pseudo-psychic vibes with Juliet and Treesus?
Yep. There is definitely psychic vibes with her and Treesus. Anyways, back in Neo Verona, the guards search the city. A merchant is revealed to be hiding Curio. Honestly, everybody seems to have not been captured, which is not really what Tybalt led us to believe earlier.
Devotes a line, motherfucker.
Or maybe only extras got captured.
The people who didn't matter.
Yeah, like Tybalt heard people say, oh, some of the people got captured. And he comes back and says, apparently some of the people got captured. And what neither of them realized was, what that actually meant was, nobody important got captured. Antonio tells Cordelia and Benvolio that the area is crawling with cabinary guards. They don't know where Juliet or Tybalt are. But since the Carbonari is still searching, they must not know where she is either. He says that Conrad is getting better. He knows where Curio is, but not Francisco. Cordelia tells him not to worry about Francisco, mostly because he's too hot to have trouble finding a place to stay. So we cut to the theater. Amelia thanks William for lending her a noble crest, which saved her. Wilhelm tells her she's free to stay with him. She says the Carbonari even arrested her neighbor. When he tries to comfort her, she says she wished they'd just capture the Capulet girls so their problems would end. William says he would drag out the drama longer in anticipation for an even more dramatic climax.
Which also, like, fuck you, William.
Lady Ariel is keeping Conrad, and I'm sorry to report this, but Grandpa is pretty built.
Is Grandpa Daddy?
He's Granddaddy.
No. I hate you both.
I do not think Conrad is Daddy.
So the gray-haired servant of Prince Montague, who we learned in this episode is named Tubal, is giving a report. And Prince Montague interrupts and asks him if he knows where Romeo is. He threatens to hold Tubal responsible if they can't find Romeo. And then a dude comes in to report the sighting of a white dragon steed ridden by a young couple. As Tubal runs off, Montague pretty quickly puts together that it's Juliet. Like, he kind of Sherlocked it, honestly.
Yeah.
So we see Lady Hermione looking sad, and Mercutio arrives and tries to butter her up by saying that it's cruel of Romeo to cause her such grief. She tells him it's not his fault, but the fault of the one causing him grief. She says his heart belongs to another, and if she were in that position, she'd never cause Romeo grief. Mercutio has a look on his face that says, well, I've stumbled into some drama. So, in the tree priory, Portia says she never thought she'd see Leonidas again. He looks around and says, to choose to live so crudely, when once I provided you with everything. She tells him, not so. There was only one thing I ever desired. Alas, it was something you could never provide me. He glares and asks about Romeo coming to the priory. He sees an iris is being kept in water, so eternally wet ass.
Beneath the standard of the wet ass iris.
Wet ass iris makes that rose game weak.
Need a bucket and a mop for that wet ass iris.
She tells him Romeo knows of his sins, and he swings his cape forward and says venomously, such a common flower is not suitable in the House of Montague. He stalks out, and she says that she pities him.
Montague's only looking for those rarer, higher flowers. Mythic well, rare, if you will. He's looking for a black lotus.
You are all wet ass
black lotuses.
No! Fuck no. Off.
No, it doesn't work.
So, Juliet is still out of it and burns their meal. Romeo tries to be nice about it anyway, but the old man has left them a much more full meal. With like bread and grapes and cheese and stuff, and
it's real nice actually.
Yeah. The next day, a traveler sees a bunch of dragon steeds descending on the village they visited. We see the Carbonari and apparently the Prince's Guard, which is a different thing. I think that's what Tubal is in charge of. Anyway, they search the homes of everyone. Tubal says it's everyone's duty to cooperate, and whoever finds them will be rewarded. Romeo and Juliet see the traveler who tells them what's happening. A guard shows Tubal the necklace, and Tubal sees the crest of House Montague on it because, again, Romeo is very dumb. Tubal insists no one rest until Romeo is found. Every house is to be burned down if need be, and everyone should be put in the gallows. One guard asks, What if they accidentally harm Romeo? And he threatens him with a sword. You would do well not to forget yourself, soldier. Obey the prince. So we see the guards burning houses down as the people watch. Romeo and Juliet see what's going on. Romeo tells her to wait while he makes his presence known, but she refuses. He says he refuses to let her bear this burden. She reminds him of their wedding vows. She says that with the two of them, maybe they can save the town's people and escape. Both of these people are very good and kind of dumb.
Yeah.
If it's the two of us, we'll be able to take down all of the guards. Anyways, guard goes to burn down a house with sick people inside. Romeo knocks him back, and both Romeo and Juliet engage in a pretty cool fight. But there's too many of these guys, and they're using, like, actual tactics, like a shield wall. Tubal arrives and orders their death. Before I go any further, I should note that at one point during this fight, Juliet dual-wields swords.
It's pretty sick.
Yeah.
No. She used a sword and a stick.
Yeah. Romeo reveals himself dramatically. Tubal tells them to take custody of Romeo. Juliet tries to fight her way to him, but when she sees she has no chance, she says, "Together shall we be, henceforth for all eternity. If it is a prize you seek, take me instead, for I am Juliet Fiamanta, Ars de Capulet," and throws her cloak aside. Tubal makes, like, a really funny oh shit face. Like, the rest of the scene is very dramatic and stuff, but I definitely laughed when I saw his facial expression to all of this. Though, to be fair, he is kind of reacting like I would if this happened to me. But then he orders her taken alive. She is surrounded and knocked down as Romeo screams. Tubal says they're to bring Romeo back. Romeo screams Juliet's name at the sky. The episode preview is a love unmatched in greatness in them swirls, but none escape the gaze that cruelty holds. Their tale of pain too sad for us to tell. With truth obscured, their tragedy unfolds.
I forgot to mention this one with the bands, but one of them, I swore, sounded just like the fucking tank guy from those Newgrounds tank guy skits.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
I'm wondering who's gonna propose the fake death, because the person who did it in the original, was... They basically killed his stand-in.
Yeah, Friar Lawrence did not survive long in this version.
So, I think this is a really great mark for the halfway point of the series. We have a lot of wonderful, wonderful dramatic tension at the end. We have our characters stand up and make a declaration. We have some great dramatic tension. Also, I will say this. I am having a bit of a prediction here. I might be jumping ahead, but I have a prediction here. With the tree thing from earlier, it ties back to what Daddy Capulet said at the very first episode, and that's like...
Don't call him that, please.
Call him Daddy Capulet, because he is a daddy.
No.
Yeah. Well, all right, Daddy O Capulet.
Hey, Daddy O Capulet.
So, Daddy O Capulet yelling at Papa Montague during the slaughtering of his whole family's like, "You can't do this. Treasus wouldn't approve." And Papa Montague's like, "Don't worry, I don't care. Dead. Kill." So I think Treasus is mad that his appointed by God king is dead and of all the sinfulness of Papa Montague, and that's why the world is going to die.
Yeah, he's mad that Papa Montague fucks.
Well, apparently does not fuck well enough, because Mama Montague is just like, "Listen, I wanted the one thing you could never give me." And I'm like, satisfaction? I know she meant love, but my like warped internet humor brain is like, satisfaction. The good Snoop Snoop.
He's never seen a wet ass iris.
That good dick.
And he thinks they're like supposed to be dry.
And it seems like Papa Montague like is like, "Listen, I have feelings of love, but I am confused and disgusted by them, and I don't know how to reciprocate that in a healthy manner. I am so sorry. I'm emotionally stunted."
Yeah.
So Papa Montague is basically just Ben Shapiro.
I would put Papa Montague above Ben Shapiro, honestly.
We're gonna have
that to feels like an insult
name.
To Papa Montague.
We're gonna have to bleep that name because he probably has a fucking Google alert on his name.
If Ben Shapiro tries to debate me with an anime podcast, I think it would actually be really funny. Like, I'm not gonna debate him, but I am gonna make fun of him a lot if he does it.
I'll debate him.
Hey, Ben Shapiro, if you're listening to this, you're a little fucking bitch.
Holy!
Damn, holy. I would debate Ben Shapiro because I can talk circles around him.
I can't debate Ben Shapiro because I'll just yell at him and he might get turned on from it, and I don't want that. He does not deserve pleasure.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Ben Shapiro. If I debated him, I wouldn't debate him. Instead, I would just find him and kick his nerdy little ass. Ben Shapiro is a fucking bitch, and has anything I said so far been a fucking lie?
Nope.
It's weird hearing Coley talk about kicking someone's ass. That's normally my thing. Wow.
Going to go to jail if they meet Ben Shapiro in real life. That's my concern.
Ben Shapiro tried to look cool with a cowboy hat, and I think the reason that he wanted to wear a hat was because it made him look taller.
Like, we love short kings in this day and age, and Ben Shapiro cannot be cool with himself enough to allow that to happen.
Ben Shapiro could never be a short king. Not in a billion fucking years.
He's too racist.
Ben Shapiro. Boople Shaboople.
What?
He doesn't deserve a real name. He's too much of a clown.
He's just Boople.
I kind of get the feeling at this point that bleeping his name out would not even work, because I think that we've put in enough details that people are going to be able to guess.
You know what? That's the best part, because then he will have to admit that he's a little bitch that gets excited when women yell at him.
He'll have to go on to his stupid whatever he does. Is it a podcast?
It's a podcast, I think.
He'll have to go on to his stupid podcast and be like, I have never gotten excited from a woman yelling at me. And then we'll just send him feet pics.
Well, they have to be AOCs like he requested.
Yeah.
And I don't really want that nice woman.
Wait, did he actually do that?
I think that was a meme. I can't tell anymore.
It's a meme.
Site's broken.
It's a meme. That one where he wants to fuck his sister is also a meme, but the thing about both of them are that they are realistic enough that it still passes, and some people are actually like, "Wait, did he actually say this?" because that is how gross a dude he is.
Just hold on, hold on. Can I do my Ben Shapiro impression?
Do it.
Sure.
I have never in my life been sexually aroused by the high-pitched, angry yelling of a female human mammal.
Hold on. It is illogical.
It is wrong. It is disgusting. And how dare you even imply that? I will clutch my pearls now.
I think that you're not going fast enough.
Hold on. You have to be it like this. I have never gotten aroused by the high-pitched screeching of a female human mammal. I'm not going to do the rest. I forgot the rest.
I can't. Oh, name- I have to go slow if I want to get like a deeper voice. That's just because I have such a, I have a little Minnie Mouse voice. I have to go.
I don't think you need to bother getting a deeper voice to do Ben Shapiro, if I'm being honest.
Ben Shapiro sounds like a child. What were you saying, Coley?
My name is Ben Shapiro, and I'm a little bit.
I think we might have to cut. I don't know if we can keep this in the podcast. I'm genuinely, like, I just don't want us to get, like, all of his little weird followers to be up our asses.
I think that at this point we're halfway through the anime, and at this point, if people who like Ben Shapiro are still listening, what the fuck are you doing? we started out with the pronouns, and we've been like pretty heavily left wing throughout this entire podcast. All the shit that we said about the cops will probably make them be turned off. Like, if they're going to get up our asses, they're going to get up our asses, like, way before we do this part. But we should also probably return to the episode, our thoughts on the episodes, and not just making fun of Ben Shapiro.
What if we just did a whole second podcast where we just make fun of Ben Shapiro?
Ben would get an erection.
God damn it.
What if we made a whole second podcast where we just make fun of shitty right-wing commentators?
The thing about making fun of Ben Shapiro in a podcast form is that the best way to do it has already been taken. And that's in Behind the Bastards, where they just read from his science fiction book.
He made a book?
He did. Oh, it's hilariously
It's
bad.
The worst book that you'll ever hear. It's called True Allegiance. I'd look it up. There's like a big... All of the positive characters are described as big, and all the nasty characters who aren't black are described as small, because... Ben Shapiro has height issues, and the big action.
Isn't his wife taller than him?
Oh yeah, she is.
Oh
Anyways,
my god, he's a Steven Universe meme. He's like giant woman. he's probably writing fanfic right now about how Lady Demetrius from the latest Resident Evil is the good guy. Actually,
he. There's like this thing, like the main hero is this real tough American hero called Brett Hawthorne. And every time that he and his wife hang up the phone before they do it, they say to each other, "Take a bullet for you, babe."
I want to go throw myself off a bridge.
Y'all remember the...
Anyways, Romeo X Juliet! Romeo X Juliet!
I think Lydia's just gonna have to cut the whole Ben Shapiro part.
I think Lydia should keep the entire Ben Shapiro part. The Ben Shapiro part is great, and he needs to know that he's a dumb little bitch.
He needs to know that even our little like anime podcast can take shots at him.
Is this where you're gonna put the "I hate you" from earlier?
I might.
What are our other thoughts about the episode that do not include prominent far-right figures?
So we do get confirmation that Juliet's hair just does the weird "it's short now" thing. I am assuming Tresas gave her that power.
Wait, so no, yeah. It's a wig.
Is that a wig?
Yeah, we saw it in a previous episode.
Oh, you're right, it is a wig. I'm sorry, I'm dumb. I forgot.
I will say that her hair does have a magic Tresas power, and it's the thing where if you get, like, a ponytail or, like, an arrangement of your hair, it just cascades down perfectly. That's the Tresas power that she, blessing that she has.
I want that power.
I also want that power. My hair gets tangled real easy.
Well, I took my hair out of a ponytail after being at work all day in front of Gordon. He's like, "Oh, I like your hair like that. You look like a Joan Jett type." But then again, Gordon has heart goggles when it comes to me, so.
Yeah.
I believe you look like a Joan Jett type.
Thank you.
I don't know what Joan Jett looks like, so I can't say on that.
Hot. Joan Jett is hot.
We love Joan Jett in this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. We love her or do not know who she is.
I know that she was that she's a major musician and was part of the Runaways, but I do not know what she physically looks like.
Anyways, again, before we go on to another pop culture figure, let's talk about other things we liked or disliked about the episode. What the fuck ever happened to Saruman? He kind of just disappears at this point.
I think he no longer serves a purpose, or the story is moving away from him until later on. I
think I can just say, without spoiling too much, he doesn't really come back.
Oh, okay. Maybe he's just like a starter villain?
He is, but it feel like it would have been a lot more satisfying if they had had something happen to him on screen.
Yeah.
I'm also very surprised this podcast, this show's only 24 episodes. I, for some reason, thought it was much longer.
Yeah. A thing I'll say is I do have a bit of a theory, and that theory is they brought in Tubal partially to replace Saruman because Tubal is going to have some minor amount of like semi-sympathetic character development on the show, and I think that they just knew that it wouldn't work at all with Saruman because they made him too much of a bastard too fast.
They needed someone like under Montague to show how bad Montague is, even to his own people.
Yeah, if Montague was shitty to Sarah, then we'd just be rooting for it.
I also like how we're kind of getting like a very obscure character from like the first couple episodes, like the actress that William speaks to. I'm glad she makes a reappearance.
Yeah, Amelia.
For a second, I'm like, is William Shakespeare in this a bisexual or is he gay? For a second, I thought he was flirting with her, and I'm like, oh no, he is disaster gay.
I think that this version of, I think that the real version of Shakespeare is probably bi, but I'm pretty sure that this version is just meant to be gay.
Oh yeah, this is the gay version of Shakespeare, but. Also, can we next episode maybe we should do some like facts about real William Shakespeare,
like the fact that he was secretly a bunch of squirrels.
What?
Do you want to you want a weird like Shakespeare fun fact?
Yeah.
Not exactly Shakespeare. So Orson Welles directed the first all black production of Hamlet.
Oh, neat.
Cool.
Like. That is awesome. I'm like, okay, that is pretty cool. But also, how did Orson Welles? What? Good for. I'm glad a lot of actors got a chance to put themselves on stage and do a show, and you know, especially in less enlightened times. But also, how the fuck did you get Orson Welles?
Yeah, that is kind of Anyways, what else on this episode?
About these two episodes together. Or when I was watching the first episode, I was a little bit tuned out because there's not a lot of, like, particularly interesting things going on.
Yeah, it's mostly just couple happy.
It's mostly just couple happy, which was nice.
Like, yeah. It was a nice breather episode, you know?
It was a nice breather episode. But breather episodes don't usually set up stuff like this immediately, like the one right after it.
Yeah.
Breather episodes are usually like, let's go to the beach.
I also will have to give them, I loved how, you know, there was another podcast, you know, just dropping lots of other podcasts because why not? I think it was called Drawn or something. It was like a mini podcast about the history of animation. They had some Disney animators on and an animation historian on, and they were talking about how a lot of animators love to animate villains because you get to go very dramatic, to have those kind of almost ugly or very over the top expressions, because it's easier to show a negative emotion. For a positive emotion, I think it's more subtle, it's harder to do. And they really did a lot of great subtle positive emotions, like when Romeo smiles and joins Juliet in the field of flowers, and there's just been a lot of really great I'm in love romantic facial expressions that come off as very genuine in this.
First of all, I think I'll say, for listeners, I got my last COVID shot this week and was a little bit late with recaps. It won't affect any of you at all, obviously, but a thing that I'll say is that this episode did have like a somewhat faster one, because it was just like the first episode where the two of them were really together and they ended up going to that cabin, because it was just like describing their micro expressions is going to be annoying, and honestly just listening to a guy tell you how two people flirted would probably just be an uncomfortable thing, so I'm just gonna summarize a lot more. And yeah,
that's valid.
Yeah,
because I think also for a lot of romantic works, for people that read romance or watch something romantic, I think you kind of have to read to really get it. Like there are books that I've read that really, really remind me of my own romantic relationship, and I just think they're so wonderful. They touch my heart greatly. But to explain why or the exact minutia would be very hard, because that was an experience that I had that I can't bring to others. So trying to describe it to others would be very difficult, and I think that's a great decision.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, at some point, it's just, like, I either have to go, like, super detailed and describe micro expressions, or I have to just summarize, and at that point, it's just, like, micro expressions would be bad radio, honestly.
They would be.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I liked these two episodes a lot. We're coming up on some of my favorite parts of this anime, actually.
Nice.
This anime has just consistently like raised in quality as it's gone on.
Yeah, it is.
We miss Studio Gonzo.
Yeah, Gonzo was either this or the opposite of this.
Like, they were very hit or miss, but I really. Like, Pumpkin Scissors, I think, was the last thing they did. And Pumpkin Scissors, I think, has a few elements that are a little problematic that we should talk about at a later date. Because I think we could arguably do Pumpkin Scissors, but there's a lot we would need to talk about.
I assume that if we're doing an anime podcast, there are going to be, like, a lot of shows that we do where it's just like, we're going to need to have a conversation about a few things.
Right?
But, like, they did Kitty Grade, Kaido Star, Chrono Crusade, Gantz, Burst Angel. That was very... Samurai 7, Desert Punk, Gangotsu. They also did Genkutsuo, The Count of Monte Cristo.
Oh, really? Wow, we're good at we're going to the Gonzo Well a lot for this. Apparently, that's not a thing I expected.
They even did Salty Ray. I love Salty Ray.
Here's a question.
Yes.
Would Helsing count as a anime adaptation of a Western work?
Yes.
Yeah, it's got Dracula in it, and honestly, like, a thing that I think I'm just gonna say outright is that as the show goes on, we're probably going to get, we're probably going to get less direct adaptations that are probably going to be like, yeah, this, we're probably going to be eventually going like, yeah, this one takes place in London, so that counts a couple of times.
But, like, they, yeah, no, they did a lot of, like, anime. Some of them are still pretty highly lauded. But, yeah, no, we're going to be, like, I know for a fact we're eventually going to be, like,
Hold on. About Gonzo. I don't think Gonzo is actually completely defunct.
Oh.
The last thing they made... Okay, a Phantasy Star Online adaptation or... And it's from 2019.
Oh, also, they say thanks to titles being released on Western streaming sites such as Netflix, like Rosario Vampire, they've been earning more. But that was in the 2012 period, so I don't know what's happening with that.
Yeah, I think Gonzo might still be around. That's interesting.
I wasn't sure that was possible.
Yeah, no, that is... So we are really heavily tapping from the studio Gonzo Well in our first year, I'm assuming. Back to Romeo and Juliet. So I think this is... Yeah, I think things have been really doing well for this series.
I look forward to seeing more Treatsus stuff.
Me too. Treatsus, I think, is just, like, weird. Like, no one is freaking out about enough about God being a tree.
We, I mean, still don't know much about Treatsus.
The thing is...
Is it, like, supposed to be a reference to the Nordic Tree of Life, maybe?
Kind of.
That would almost help explain why they called Juliet Odin.
Yeah, but everybody else is super Italian.
Yeah.
We have to keep in mind, though, this is an anime, so I'm not surprised if they're like, let's just smush a lot of European concepts together, because look at America. We do that to almost every other culture.
Yeah, and, like, let's smoosh together the prince from Romeo and Juliet and a tree. And then make that tree god.
I mean, trees are god.
Trees are real and they are god, unlike birds. Birds are not real.
Birds are fake.
Birds are fake.
The deep state is lying to you. Birds are not real.
The pandemic lockdowns. The pandemic lockdowns were to change the birds' batter.
These were a good pair of episodes. This may be a love that can never be, but our love for this anime is not. I'm Zeb Berryman. This has been Anime's Journey to the West. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at Anime's Journey TW, as well as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Music is Tavern Loop 1 by Alexander Nakarada at SerpentSoundStudios.com, licensed under Creative Commons 4.0. This may be a love that can never be, but our love for this anime is not.